Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in for Carrie Miller. Now, I hope you had a wonderful holiday and that you're staying warm. Now, let's talk politics. As 2017 winds down, how effective was the Trump administration's first year in office? What about Congress, the new tax law, and the unfinished business? It's a long list, like renewing the Children's Health Insurance Program and the federal government's budget. That's just a sliver of things we'll talk about this morning, and I want to hear what you're thinking about as well. What's your assessment of the year in politics? What progress are you hoping to see in 2018? So you can call us at 651-227-6000, toll-free 800-242-2828. You can also talk to me online by tweeting at CFarrellEcon. That's at C-F-A-R-R-E-L-L Econ. Now, let's turn to Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. He joins us this morning from D.C. Ken, welcome.
Good morning, Chris. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And how was your holiday?
Well, it was good. It was, but of course, as a political person, one thinks that these times of year, what the year has been like. And I know you want to concentrate on presents and family and all those good things. But when you look at the year of 2017 and you look at the year of politics, my goodness, it was, shall we say, it was some year to behold.
Okay, so let's do the proverbial fly up the 30,000 feet and give us your take on the year in politics. I mean, what really stands out to you?
Well, of course, you can't ignore the fact that the person who became president on January 20th was somebody who received like 3 million fewer votes than his opponent in the election, and yet he was still president. You can't help but notice that at the inaugural address in January, he was almost like a bleak look of what the nation was looking like, as opposed to a more optimistic look, which you hear from most presidents. But let's be honest, Donald Trump was never going to be like most presidents. He was different. He came from a different background, and he was certainly not the kind of person who we've seen in the White House before. Having said that, we also saw some things that, I mean, clearly that the opposition was greater than you've seen from earlier presidents as well. Donald Trump finished the year, spent most of the year with lower approval ratings than almost any recent president, if not every recent president in memory, at least. You saw a women's movement that seemed to be, you know, almost not going, you know, it was almost like directionless, but it became as early as January 21st. You saw a women's movement and the resistance and women taking a stand about excesses you're hearing from government. We saw athletes taking a knee in protest. We saw a lot of, and now, of course, we saw a lot of men in power paying for their misdeeds. I mean, not only Harvey Weinstein and entertainment, but we saw it in media, in business, and of course, as you in Minnesota well know, in politics as well, with Al Franken. So, in other words, it was just a year of a lot of change, a lot of anger, and of course, we have no idea what's going to go into 2018. But just one quick reminder, 50 years ago into 2018 was another horrific year with the assassinations of Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy and the riots at the convention in 68, you know, in Chicago. So we've seen terrible, awful years before, and we just don't know what to expect in 2018.
Well, going into 2018, the Trump administration and the Republican Congress, I mean, they are marching in with a victory, which is an overhaul of the tax system, corporate and individual tax system. And there's a different tone to a lot of the political writing right now. It's all about a major victory marching into 2018.
It was a major victory, and of course, because we spent all year long talking about how ineffective the Republican Congress was, how ineffective President Trump was getting what he wanted, and of course, that was mostly about the Affordable Care Act, the famous repeal and replace edict that he was hoping for that never happened. But in this tax bill, and of course, there were other things that the Republicans accomplished, especially regarding the appointment of lifetime judges to the federal federal appeals courts around the country. But in this tax bill, it lowered corporate rates from 35% to 21%. It lowered a lot of estate taxes, which helped the rich, and of course it did other things as well. It repealed the individual mandate with the Affordable Care Act, which is a big attack on Obamacare. It opens up the Arctic region in Alaska for drilling. So to say that the Republicans had an unsuccessful year, boy, that tax bill was really what the Republicans wanted. They really wanted to say something to the voters saying, here's what we accomplished, promises made, promises kept. It was a big victory for them.
So maybe you could explain something to me, because you're called the political junkie, so you probably understand
this.
That's true. Now, if you look at the sort of, and I'm making a gross generalization, but if you look at the political press, they're talking about this as a major victory. This is a game changer. It changes the way you look at the past year. You look at more of the business economic press, it's a lot more cautious. Yes, you're going to get a kick to economic growth, but not as much. And there's a lot of concern about a lot of the details in the tax law about the business pass-through and the complexity, and that this is going to lead to a lot of abuse. And it's as if these are two different worlds coexisting.
That's a great point. That's a great point, Chris, because there is a difference between politics and reality. And of course, reality can lead to politics. The politics of it was a great victory for the Republican Party. As I said, promises made, promises kept. But the reality is, one, it remains a very, very unpopular bill. Two, it raises the deficit to like $1.5 trillion over 10 years. And this is anathema to all what the Republicans have been saying since they got elected, that we got elected and we ran for office because we wanted to lower the deficit. We wanted to live within our means. We wanted to be fiscally responsible. Certainly, there's no way you can make the case that the tax bill that they just passed was that way. But as I said, the reality could lead to politics. Because if it does turn out to be unpopular, if voters in New York, New Jersey, California, other high tax states realize that all those deductions they were so used to taking advantage of, such as the property taxes or state and local tax write-offs, if they can no longer do that, then they'll also say this is not what we wanted, and Republicans could pay a price in the fall. But having said that, and yes, this is all one sentence, but having said that, we also said in 2013 when the Republicans shut down the government that the GOP would pay for it at the polls in 2014, and they did not.
They did not. That's right.
Donald Trump has a way of turning a bad situation into good, at least into his eyes and his supporters' eyes, and we'll see what happens in 2018.
You're listening to NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, sitting in for Kerry Miller. This morning, I'm speaking with Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast, but I want to hear from you. What do you want to know about the coming year in politics? What's a big decision that you're waiting for? Call us at 651-227-6000, toll free 800-242-2828, or you can reach me online by tweeting to @CFarrellEcon. All right, Ken, speaking about unfinished business, I mean, what's up with the budget? I mean, this is like a basic job. If you're elected to Congress, is you come up with a budget for the federal government, but we're what, on our second, third? How many stopgap measures have been passed?
Exactly. This budget ended, I mean, the paying for the government, the financing of the government ended September 30th.
Yeah, so we keep that's a while ago.
2 weeks. It is. I mean, I was still young back then. We passed these 2 week stopgap measures that, rather than make a decision, they just put it off for another couple of weeks. And the next deadline is now January 19th, which is looming pretty soon. And all those things that were not addressed, for example, money to pay for the calamities we saw in Puerto Rico and Texas and Florida, the hurricanes and the relief efforts. What about the Dream Act, the Dreamers who are here? There's no funding for them. As you pointed out, I think in the introduction, the Children's Health Insurance Program, the CHIP program, that funding is still up in the air. And first of all, there's also so many other things. There are so many imponderables. The fact that The fact that Doug Jones won the Senate race in Alabama, now that it's 51-49 Republican Senate, so the Republicans cannot afford to lose more than two senators, and more than one senator.
One senator,
most,
yeah.
If you lose, exactly, because you know that you'll 50-50 would give a Mike Pence tie, but two senators, they would lose it. We don't know about the precarious health about John McCain, what his political future is, not to put his life in political terms, but John McCain, we have to watch him as well. And there were so many other things as well. I mean, we're talking about, you know, even as the Republicans lost the Alabama Senate race, Steve Bannon is talking about challenging all these other Republicans in the primaries because they are not sufficiently conservative or sufficiently loyal to Trump. So while we're, and at the same time, the Democrats are also eating their own because there are a lot of progressive Democrats who hate the fact that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and other leaders of the Democratic Party went along with this short time, you know, this one month extension of the funding, because why aren't the Democrats demanding a say on what to do about the Dream Act and the CHIP program and things like that? And what about possible cutbacks to food stamps and welfare and Medicaid? So both parties have internal struggles ahead of them, and of course we keep pushing off these decisions for another 2 weeks or a month, but eventually something's going to have to happen.
All right, well, we're not going to push off Jan anymore. Jan is in St. Paul.
I'm sorry, Jan. I talk too much. Sorry, Jan.
Jan?
Not a problem.
What's your question for Ken?
So the Republicans got their tax bill passed. I'm very nervous about what it's going to do to my taxes. I don't get a paycheck. I'm 85 years old. And my thought on all of this is, they talk now about they're going to start messing around with Social Security and Medicare. That is definitely the third rail, especially for people in my age group. And if they're going to start talking about reducing Social Security, I got a $25 a month increase in Social Security for 2018. Medicare took half of it. Last year I got a $4 increase. Medicare took all of it. So, I mean, they better remember that seniors, if they don't do anything else, they vote. Thank you.
Ken?
Well, Jan makes a very important point. And the key thing in my mind is what she just said, is that she talked about cutting Social Security as the third rail of politics. Now, obviously, anybody who knows anything about trains is that the third rail, you don't touch it because you get electrocuted.
Right.
Somehow that fact doesn't seem to be, you know, the Republicans seem to be ignoring such things about all the attacks on Social Security and food stamps and welfare, things that could hurt the poor, especially at the time when they gave the rich such a big tax cut and the corporations such a big tax cut. You know I sound like a Democrat here, but the fact is that you can't, I don't know how you could go to the voters and say, we help the rich, but we hurt the poor, and please reelect Republicans to Congress in 2018. And so what Jan says, the real answer may not be stopping the Republican Congress, but it may be changing it with the November elections. But again, that's a long way off.
All right. So another thing going into this whole affordability, what can we afford? I want to go to Nicholas in your Columbia Heights, right, Nicholas?
Yes.
So what's your question?
There's a potential for bipartisan working together on the infrastructure. I'm wondering, is this going to be a bunch of little patchwork projects, or is it going to be a major, superb, excellent program that'll get the nation's infrastructure into the 22nd century?
Well, I can kind of guess which way you would like the Congress to go and the administration. But Ken, what are they thinking?
I kind of think Nicholas had quotes around the great, stupendous, fantastic plan, just like it sounds like we're talking about the Soviet Union leaders or Kim Jong-un, you know, these super fantastic, our revered leader. But Trump and the Republicans are talking about a huge infrastructure infusion of money that is part government, part private money. And one of the things that Trump, when he first came to office, when he was first elected, he did talk about a bipartisan policy that would include both parties with infrastructure reform. And when we see these Amtrak crashes and these bridges crumbling and the roads falling apart, That's a big need in this country. Whether there's the money to match this desire is another question altogether. It's interesting that sometimes Republicans will say that tax cuts we can afford, but infrastructure we cannot. But I kind of think that Trump really wants this to happen. And I think Republicans are also trying to reach out to Democrats saying we want to work together on this. My guess is something does happen. I don't think it's the itsy-bitsy thing that Nicholas may be afraid of. I don't think it's the gigantor thing that will land to the 23rd century either, but somewhere in the middle.
All right. So, Ken, one of the things that, you know, in reflecting these questions, is 2018 the year of we can't afford? We can't afford Social Security. We can't afford a farm bill. We can't afford a big infrastructure spending bill because we did this tax cut. And so 2017, we could call it the year of the tax cut. Is 2018 the year of we can't afford?
Well, that's, you see, the problem I've always felt is that Republicans have always argued that if you ever want more money for something, let's just say it's for hurricane relief, like we said during Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico and things like that, they always say, well, we need corresponding cuts in other programs. And of course, when you have that, it goes back to Jan's original question, the fear of cuts in Social Security and things like that. But how do you make the argument to the American people that we're going to have a $1.5 trillion increase in the deficit for these tax cuts and not afford the things that you know the people around the country need? So okay. I don't know the answer to it. I don't know how it go ahead. I'm sorry, but I'll say I don't know how it flies politically.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking your time.
Chris, good luck in 2018. That's all I can say.
Thanks. That was Ken Rudin.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That was Ken Rudin, the political junkie.